Get a global perspective. Join UNH Franklin Pierce School of Law's 100% online International Criminal Law and Justice programs. Now accepting applications at law.unh.edu/ICLJ. What are the proper channels for the United States to make an impact on corruption on a foreign nation? Professor Buzz Scherer joins me to discuss. This is the UNH Law Podcast. Learn more about the law school and apply by visiting law.unh.edu. Opinions discussed are solely the opinion of the faculty or host and do not constitute legal advice or necessarily represent the official views of the University of New Hampshire. So, Buzz, your suggestion on this topic was fascinating, especially with the impeachment inquiry, Rudy Giuliani's work for Trump in Ukraine, and all the rest of the fiasco filling the news cycle right now. What are some of the reasons why the U.S. would want to clear out corruption in a foreign nation?
A host of reasons, particularly in the last 20 years since the fall of the Soviet, more than 20 years now, 25, almost 30 years since the fall of the Soviet Union, there've been, you know, a lot of Eastern European countries would be what we call emerging democracies. That is, and emerging economies, and those overlap. They are not under the sway of the Soviet Union. They're not taking orders. Their governments are not taking orders from the Soviet Union. They're not. Their economy is not part of a comprehensive Soviet Union-wide economic plan where, you know, Armenia would make light bulbs or another country would do something else. So each of these countries have had to, in a sense, build anew their economies in a way that would function in the 21st century. And, you know, it's an easy thing to say, but boy, is that a difficult thing, even in the best of circumstances. And in many of these countries, one of the things that's happened is there are people exploiting the fact that the governmental structure is just emerging, right. That the rule of law, for example, is not firmly in place. That if foreign interest invests in a country, a multinational company invests in one of these countries, and something goes wrong, the issue has been for some time, can they get relief in the court system? Mm-hmm. So that's one example. If the country is so corrupt that foreign international companies are leery of investing, that's not good for the economy. And then the country it ends up being controlled by those with lots of money who are exploiting the weakness in the economy and exploiting the weakness in the legal system to make a lot of money. And that's, you know, versions of that have been playing out throughout Eastern Europe. It's not unique to the Ukraine. One of the problems with the Ukraine that layered on top of that is, to put it pretty simply, they're at war with Russia.
Right.
Russia annexed a portion of Ukraine, and they continue to have a military struggle with them on the borders of that region of Ukraine that Russia annexed. So, boy, is that a complicating factor.
Right. Now, what are the traditional ways that the United States would try and pressure a country to resolve some of these issues?
Well, I would put it differently. Mm-hmm. The United States economic interest is to have a healthy, newly liberated, newly in the last 25 years, liberated democracies and economies be robust and strong. It makes for a better international economy. And it makes for, in national security terms, it's the best kind of economic strength and democratic strength is the best kind of bulwark against an encroaching authoritarian regime. So the interest of the United States is to find ways to help a country like Ukraine if the government is willing, and even if the government is not willing, deal with corruption. Corruption takes many forms. The financial system, the legal system, a very powerful area, an area where there's very significant corruption, particularly in Eastern Europe areas, is customs and border control. So that's the context. It's a search. The U.S. interest is for stable economies, and particularly in a country like Ukraine and other countries bordering Russia, for economic and democratic stability. So the tools the U.S. has, let's put aside for a second diplomatic tools, they can prosecute individuals in Ukraine who are engaging in conduct that in some way affects the United States, or United States economic interests, affects the national security of the United States, or affects an individual in the United States. So, for example, if a Ukrainian oligarch were to engage in financially suspect behavior that involved U.S. dollars and involved U.S. banks or U.S. individuals, even though that oligarch never set foot in the United States, he or she could be prosecuted under federal law.
How would that rely on getting the person extradited? I mean, what sort of ways would that happen?
Therein lies part of the problem in using that most direct tool, using the criminal justice system to manage a portion of the corruption problem. The United States does not currently have an extradition treaty with Ukraine. Which means if we have an extradition treaty, that means there's a formal process in place, both in the country we're extraditing the individual from and the United States, to make that happen. And it's the same in every country with whom the United States has an extradition treaty. But Ukraine is one of those that we don't have an extradition treaty. And we don't have a treaty that makes it easy for us to collect evidence, which is a separate treaty. But boy, you can get somebody over here. If you can't collect evidence that might exist on computers in Ukraine or documents, it's going to be hard to prosecute. So there are limits to the use of the criminal justice system, even though jurisdictionally it's got a pretty long arm. It can reach into the Ukraine. There are limits to what the ability to use the criminal justice system to fight corruption. The upside is a wrong way to put it. One of the advantages the federal prosecutors, if they so choose, have in this area, particularly in the Eastern European countries, is American dollars are valuable.
Very.
So not infrequently, those who are engaging in corruption and making lots of money may well be using U.S. banks. And may well be traveling to European countries with whom we have extradition treaties. So that's the some of the advantages. You know, another example, which is completely different, but an area in which I've done some writing, is cybercrime. Right. You know, there is a good body of evidence that shows that some cyber attacks on private U.S. companies or aspects of the U.S. government originated in Ukraine. It's unclear what part of Ukraine, whether it's the part now controlled by Russia, whether it's the part not controlled by Russia, let's call it the free Ukraine.
Right. I mean, this is a huge issue with Ukraine is there's two nations that are known for having cronyism issues that are both based in the same geographic location.
Yep. And it's difficult. You know, and underlying all of this is, you know, a really foundational question. What right does the United States have, or what right should we have to interfere in the business of another country? It's, you know, in the context of a particular problem, we can come up with really quick and easy answers. But, you know, it's a foundational question that is never settled. Mm-hmm. You know, some in this country, understandably, are very aggressive about getting involved, internally involved in a country where there are human rights violations going on. Some are very aggressive about getting involved internally in a country when there's all sorts of corruption going on. But that there is that, you know, where are the it's an ongoing puzzle that gets solved partially over and over again, depending on what the relationship the United States has with the particular country. For example, the United States performed poorly, whatever one thinks of this, performed poorly in Darfur. Mm-hmm. When the genocide was occurring in Rwanda, for example. And the criminal justice system, just to go back, mm-hmm. the criminal justice system is one mechanism, but there are limits there. Interestingly, you can diplomatically, indirectly work with European countries, the stable, more Western European countries who have different and in many ways better relationships with Ukraine, and they may well have a better ability to manage this, be it the mm-hmm. European Union or just generally those European countries. So, and that's a different kind of diplomatic effort on the United States part. It's working closely with prosecutors in those countries and the governments of those more Western European countries to enable them and support them in getting involved at kind of found at on the ground ways in Ukraine, because some of the money in Ukraine is banked in European countries.
Right.
So, you know, notice again, this theme of money is important. If you can get at them and get at people who are corrupt, who have the money, that can make a big difference. Another thing that can be done is sanctions.
Mm-hmm. Which made me really think of Iran with what you were just talking about, with the impact you need to have with the European Union and the U.S.
Yeah. Now, sanctions, European countries can sanction Ukraine if they want, or any other Eastern European country or any other country. They have their own sanction laws. Sanctions usually involve, I mean, it's rare to sanction an entire country or mm-hmm. entire government. What you usually are doing with sanctions is you are seizing their assets that are in U.S. banks or French banks or German banks or Swiss banks. That's what the guts of sanctions are about. Currently, the United States has sanctioned Russian individuals who have had involvement in Ukraine. Mm-hmm. They haven't directly sanctioned any of the oligarchs that I'm aware of in Ukraine. So that's another way you can deal with corruption in any of these countries. The best way to deal with corruption in these countries, I kind of shrug at it. The best way to deal with it is through a multi-layered diplomatic and aid effort. Mm-hmm. That you work, cooperate with prosecutors in Ukraine. You give them support. You give them training. You make available the possibility, your criminal justice system, in ways that might assist them by choosing to charge an extradite from countries other than Ukraine individuals involved in preying on the Ukraine. But I mean, it's really telling in this circumstance to talk about that, because in the last 10 plus years, one of the problems in Ukraine in terms of corruption has been the head prosecutor's office has been the corrupt office.
Right, which makes it very difficult.
Which makes it really difficult to do the kind of multi-layered cooperation I was talking about. And
when your anti-corruption bureau has corruption issues, as in what is suspected in Ukraine, it's really problematic.
Exactly. And that's, you know, and that's a piece of what's going on now is what really isn't out there is the effort by the Obama administration was to get rid of the corrupt chief prosecutor out of there. They were successful at doing that. But that's only recently. And as that was happening, that prosecutor was undermining the U.S. ambassador to the Ukraine, Marie
Yovanovitch.
So to some people's thinking, without really taking a position on this one way or another, I mean, I have a position, but that's not the point here, without really trying to articulate any particular position, there's a strong amount of evidence that suggests that their reason Marie Yovanovitch was taken out of Ukraine, was demoted from being the ambassador to Ukraine, is the corrupt prosecutor, has developed a whisper rumor campaign, spreading rumors that she was corrupt, that she was bad. And there is a good bit of evidence that that's the reason she was demoted, so to speak. So to go back to the broader issue, it's a hard – in any country, it's really difficult for the United States to help that country – let me speak in two terms, helping the country and helping the government.
Right.
Helping that country develop into a stable economy and a stable – a democracy, so it's an opportunity for U.S. investment in that country from the U.S. perspective, and so it's an opportunity for economic stability and growth for that country. That's the economic interest. Mm-hmm. And that's true for any country.
Right.
You know, it's tough, particularly when it's an emerging democracy, and there's aspects of it, particularly in the early years when it's more like a Wild Wild West show, mm-hmm. or in this case, Wild Wild East show. And then you layer it. So that's true in any country, and then to separate from the country, our interest in stability in the country, there's the issue of the particular government in place, which, as without getting into the details, can get very complicated
very
quickly. and then, you know, in certain countries like Ukraine, they got this war going on with Russia, and our national security interests and our diplomatic interests, we hope, are driven by our national security and economic interests, are tremendously complicated when Russia is involved, deeply involved in this war and this battle with Ukraine. We got interest in the Ukraine. We got separate interests in dealing with Russia that transcend the Ukraine issue. You know, diplomatically, it's very complicated. So an effort to And I offer this, you know, as a broad context for thinking about what it means to, if it is motivated by a desire to deal with broad corruption in Ukraine. What is our interest in withholding military aid to Ukraine? You know, given the other tools we have available, given our ability to cooperate with European nations, if our government has a good relationship with European nations, you know, as a practical matter, it appears that that's the sole effort that this current administration has made to, even if you believe what they say, to deal with corruption. Mm-hmm. There's been no efforts after the aid was finally given to deal with corruption. There were no other efforts made before then at any of the other ways I've talked about. So it's a perspective on that piece. Again, whatever your view is on what actually happened and the meaning of the withholding of the aid, what so far it appears we've seen in the Ukraine is a very one-dimensional effort to deal with broad-ranging corruption, if in fact that's what that effort was about.
Thanks for listening to the UNH Law Podcast. Be sure to comment and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or Spotify. And now be sure to check out the video version of the show on Facebook, YouTube, and LinkedIn. See you next Thursday. Join the powerhouse for legal education. Earn your JD, LLM, master's degree, or certificate from a top 100 law school. Residential and online programs available. Now accepting applications at law.unh.edu.